Welcome to East Meets West, episode 244. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Roger Chang.
Wow, is there that much lag, or are you just slow today?
I'm slow.
Slow today. Sort also, joining us to keep us from being slow, star of stage and screen, the Weird Things podcast, NSFW show, Mr. Justin Robert Young.
Hello, Tom and Roger. I'm very excited to be back here on East Meets West.
I'm very happy to have you on East Meets West. You and Roger were having a great episode before we started recording. I'm sorry to interrupt with the introduction. Please carry on.
We had an episode.
It was a very episodic conversation.
You were talking. You were basically doing the show already, talking about movies and talking about plots and why they are the way they are.
Well, yeah, I think we were talking about action movies because Roger had mentioned that he had seen Battle Los Angeles, and you know, specifically if you look at the you know, kind of almost in my mind merging of you know, how first person shooter and video game storylines and plots have become more emphasized over the last 10 years, and the visual language of action movies, especially big spectacle war action movies, are kind of affected by what we see in terms of the tropes of the first-person shooter, that it's kind of interesting to see that those two particular kind of mediums come closer together, that you know, the games are cooler to go through in terms of a plot, and the video and the movies, rather, seem more like video games in terms of the visual action.
If you look at, like, a really crappy action movie produced these days and then compare it to an average movie of the 70s, do you think that movies have gotten better, worse, or about the same? Because part of me thinks the current action movies are, we're actually a more sophisticated audience, and therefore they're actually better than movies were many years ago. We just, our tastes have improved as a culture. But then part of me is like, you know, the 70s had some pretty freaking awesome movies before the Hollywood studios kind of moved in and turned it into this really a grind of summer blockbusters. The summer blockbuster season lasts almost all year long now.
Yeah. Well, you know, go ahead, Roger.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that. So I actually watched Cobra, the Sylvester Stallone, you know, tough as nails, you know, doesn't play by the rules cop movie, which was an action flick. And one of the things I noticed was a lot of the elements of violence were very, you know, were very human in scale. I mean, someone had a pistol, a knife, and running them over with their car. But nowadays, you need, like, fantastic explosions from, you know, either a tall building or outside of a plane. You know, something that defies what a normal person could, you know, realistically experience. And I think if what happens is kind of like the, you know, our tastes and say beverages or, you know, like soda or confections like candies or cakes and stuff, you reach a plateau where everything kind of, okay, you know, it's sweet. It has so much caffeine. And then someone comes along, well, I'm going to make it even better by dumping even more sugar and more caffeine and making it extreme. And, you know, not only is he going to jump through, you know.
Yeah, remember when Mountain Dew was actually like a crazy beverage? Like, who would drink Mountain Dew? It's got so much sugar and caffeine in it. Now it's like average.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And, well, yeah, and I think in terms of your –
stop being
your,
polite.
Your
just talk over each other.
Oh, is that okay? Cool. When you look at whether movies are better now than in, let's say, the 70s, you know, I think the biggest thing that's changed has been pacing. You know, some of, like, the best movies that came out of the 70s are great in spite of the fact that they are very long, and you know, the pacing is so you know, spaced out compared to now, where, like, you can watch a bad movie, but at least it's a bad movie that tends to move, or at least we put more of a an emphasis on it. If we'll criticize a movie more for lagging or not getting to the point.
Yeah, I would have to agree. Pacing is a big deal. I mean, as long as things move, people aren't going to complain. And, you know, Battle LA was 2 hours almost, and it didn't feel like it because the pacing was really fast. Everything kept moving. It didn't sit on anything. No one really had time to dwell on you know someone dying or anything. Maybe a few moments, you know, interspersed, but you know, nothing that took up more than like, you know, 4 or 5 minutes. And I'm curious because one of the issues I had watching older movies, even now, like when I go through Netflix and I say, oh yeah, I'll watch that, is pacing. It's just like, you know, there's slow scenes are really slow.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if it's because we've been so geared by advertising, by what we see on the web, by having things on demand when we want it, that we're a lot more impatient. We're not willing to sit through something. You know, if it doesn't satisfy us within the first 10 minutes, you're like, ah, it's dumb. I'm out of here. I want to do something else.
Yeah, you can make an argument that movies are worse now because we have to have fast pacing. We're not patient enough for a good story to unfold. An analog to this, a lot of the criticisms of Patrick Rothfuss's writing, he's a fantasy novel writer, is that he has great stories, but they're told too long and too ponderously. But a lot of the effect of his novels has to do with having that world built up so that when something happens, when someone dies, when some strange event happens, you're impacted because you've gotten to know the characters. And even just to make an argument, to make a point, sometimes you have to set up several parameters and then reveal the point. So in movie storytelling, sometimes it just takes a while. Do you think we lose that because it's like, everybody's got short attention span, we got to move this thing along, or everybody gets bored?
Well, at the end of the day, though, I think that, you know, commercial filmmaking and that kind of storytelling is still a reasonably young art form, you know, and I don't know if us putting more of an attention on pacing is that we're leaving something behind. It might just be that, hey, we've done, you know, this for, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60 years now, and we're learning lessons of what people want to see or what would make something better. I mean, there's going to be, you know, a learning curve to anything. And I think this just might be part of it. Personally, there's a pace for every story. And for, that particular fantasy author, his might be a slower one where you tend to, you know, kind of get into the, into that story a little bit more. But, you know, I don't think it's a universal thing. And I think in general, a tighter pacing is probably better.
I agree. I mean, you know, it could be very well a cyclical cultural thing. I mean, maybe in a decade or so, you know, people want things slower. I mean, the slow food movement during the 70s and 80s and 90s, there's a big buildup of getting food fast and when you want it.
Isn't the slow food movement more about local than it is about fast?
It's local, but it's also about less emphasis on the convenience factor of having something immediately when you want it, is the way I understood it. And it, by basically taking the time to actually prepare it properly, you know, in the way it was supposed to, instead of just, you know, making the most convenient, you know, sandwich or edible item that you could or can.
It's about enjoying the food. That's what they say. What is slow food? Slow food is an idea, a way of living, and a way of eating. It is a global grassroots movement with thousands of members around the world that links the pleasure of food with a commitment to community and the environment. So it's not about, like, well, we don't want to serve it fast. You could have fast, slow food as long as you're still committed to, you know, the taste,
sitting down
and the community
it.
And the environment in which it's grown.
That seems a little heady for lunch. I don't know. Like,
fast,
you know,
slow
we
food.
Have to sign on to all that. You know, well, it's just like, how about I, you know, I like the fact that that place has a good burger, you know, or that they, I mean, I don't know. I understand having a philosophical idea worked into, you know, your daily life. And especially if, you know, you have concerns about, you know, the environment and stuff like that. But I don't know. There's only so much I can get worked up over onion rings.
Yeah, but it's more about like the idea, if you know a certain place, let's say you've got two burger joints to choose from. If you don't, then it's not a deal, right? You got no choice.
Yeah.
But I guess your choice is not to eat burgers. But this is just we're getting the metaphor is getting out of control.
We are living in a world where only burgers are served.
You've got two restaurants to choose from, right? And one of them's slow food and the other's not. if you know one is slow food, then you can choose that, and you don't have to do any more thinking about it. The only thing is that if it didn't taste better, you didn't like it, then you might want to choose the other one. But the point of slow food is that it tastes better because you're taking time to, you know, grow local vegetables with organic methods that, you know, make for tastier vegetables, and you've got a chef who actually cares. He's not just slabbing some frozen burger out on the grill, you know, and he's a 12-year-old. It's somebody who's like, no, we have a place called Easy's.
12-year-old.
Man, have you seen
this?
You got some interesting ideas about labor laws.
12-year-old. They do.
Apparently, it's the mine in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. It's just, you know, they mine rocks in the morning and then they cook burgers later at night.
And those rocks are the burgers because they're frozen.
Ah, the big plot twist. See, right there, 5 minutes, we got from the beginning to the plot twist in the third act. See, that's pacing, my friends.
I think you're right. I think it's the pacing is determined by the story. That's the key. And so, you know, if all of a sudden you realize that the rocks are the frozen burgers and the 12-year-olds have been cooking them as well as mining them, the story dictated we got there.
Technically, it's a burger mine, which would be very interesting, I guess.
Wasn't that a video game, Burger Mine?
Burger Time. Burger Time.
Maybe I'm thinking of Burger Time. Yeah.
The burgers in like the four bars or whatever.
Yes. And which is a side note. I never understood that video game because you're not only putting down the beef patty, but you're also putting a sausage. I don't know. It seemed kind of a little much for a burger.
I'll tell you what. Now that you think of it, that might not be a bad idea. You throw a little sausage patty on a burger.
It was like a link sausage.
Yeah. Like. Well, I guess that would be awkward. That'd be awkward to kind of put on a burger patty. But maybe you slice it halfway and you have the sausage burger. I don't know. All I know is that when the 12-year-old cooks it for me, I want him to care about it. All right? I don't want it to just be some job.
Exactly. Back to our main point is if it's a 12-year-old chef who's like taking grass-fed beef and molding it with his hands and making a patty and cooking it to perfection, that's going to taste better than, you know, the old 75-year-old man who's just, you know, his retirement fund got lost in the crash and he has to have the job at McDonald's and he's just slapping frozen burgers down. He didn't care.
No,
it's a very interesting twist. I mean, normally it's the older generation that understands the necessity for doing things right, you know, without the impetuousness of youth. But in your universe, you know, it's a 12-year-old that deems cooking a frozen beef patty with care and affection is, you know, the tantamount of his life's goal, while the old guy just wants to get through the shift and collect his paycheck at the end of the day.
So he could get home and drink his 10-high bourbon in peace.
Exactly. Well, meanwhile, the 12-year-old, number one, I just love the just anybody saying anything with the concept of a 12-year-old's life work, you know, that finally he's worked so hard to get to this position.
For 12 years.
12 whole years.
He went from apprentice. Slave. Patty cooker to
happen, man. He could be like the Doogie Howser of chefs.
Look out, life. I'm in the catbird seat now. Me, Justin, the 12-year-old burger chef.
You know, I would never let Doogie Howser work. I'm sorry. I understand the premise of the show, but no, he's not working on me.
You would not? Like, if they said, look, this is the most genius doctor in the world. We know he's very young, but he has proven himself. He's saved lives. You have a 95% chance of living with this doctor and only a 70% chance of living with another doctor. And you'd still say, Roger Chang, no way. Doogie Howser is not operating on me.
No. Not seeing me without my clothes on. That's all I'm saying.
What if they had to pull... he had to hire like a front man, right? So, you know, you'd be going in for some, you know, elective surgery or maybe something more serious, and you're meeting with a regular, like an older doctor, and he's named Doogie Howser, right? And then all of a sudden you go under, and like maybe like the last thing you see is like a 12-year-old kid just kind of come into vision, and that's the, like, and you wake up and you're great. But it's like, that's where they had to go. They had to go through those lengths to save your life, Roger.
That'd be very interesting. I think that would make a great sitcom movie.
Oh no, the scope is down, and I can't possibly get into this artery with my own hands. These 35-year-old hands are too big. What do we do? Oh, Doogie Howser's got very small hands. He can get in there and save your life with his tiny, tiny hands.
Look at his splits.
If they wanted someone with tiny hands, they would get like a little 4-year-old. You know,
even better.
Danny, do you want to help Danny fix someone with an arm?
Justin, are you about to say I'm starting to feel that labor laws should be changed so that 4-year-olds could become doctors?
I'll tell you what. I think that we have a very exciting trend in medical science right now where we're just going younger and younger with our doctors. And it's like you hear like two rich dudes at a board meeting somewhere just bragging. One's bragging to the other one like, oh, yes, no, I have the finest 6-year-old doctor in the world. Like, oh, wow.
He spent 6 years in medical school pretty much all his life.
His entire life. They have these, like, these doctors are just being raised like veal. Like, they're just kept in boxes and educated in the ways of medical science.
Well, they're born in a hospital. They just don't leave.
Why are we going to go and take them away?
They're force-fed a high-nutrient protein shake every day. And then, you know, they basically get inundated with medical education.
The Merck index is read to them every night in their sleep.
Absolutely. Well, all right. I will say, just getting back to the original point about like the pacing thing, it's interesting to see that we've really exploded is like the 12 to 13 episode, like cinema quality television show with like Sopranos and Deadwood and all the stuff that HBO has done. And like that has, I think that's a genre that's really exploded over the last 10 years, which would suggest that we do like super long stories. We just like them 1 hour at a time.
Or on DVD, where we can just watch them at our leisure.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We'll watch 8 hours worth of it, you know, and that's way longer than we would think.
Have you ever tried that, watching like one or two seasons of a show and like within in like one sitting?
Oh, yeah.
I tried doing that and I get really fatigued at the end of it. It's like, I don't think he could take anymore.
Yeah, you get to that point where it's like you were talking about earlier with the candy. It's like, I can't have one more episode of this. My brain is full of Smallville or whatever it was you're watching.
And then, go ahead.
Oh yeah. I've never been in a position. I mean, like I've definitely, like, especially Lost, the first season of Lost, I just, you know, me and my two roommates were watching it and it definitely took up like an entire weekend, you know, as much as we could stand of it. And you know, we would just, you know, slam one episode after the next. But I've never actually just gone through an entire season like that. Only big chunks.
I've gone through, I probably have gone through an entire season in a weekend, never in a sitting. Roger, have you gone through an entire weekend in a sitting?
Yes, I did a Saturday and a Sunday morning. And I felt really, really bad because
when you say Saturday, Sunday morning, you mean you like watched past midnight into the early hours?
No. I would watch, say, like I would start around 11 o'clock and I'd finish up around 8 or 9, and then I would pick back up.
So again. but not one sitting. Two sitting.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
Okay. So
I would get up, of course, for potty breaks.
It's kind of the modern day media consumer's version of I can eat 50 eggs.
Yes, I was actually going to say it's like eating an entire cake by yourself.
Yeah.
No, it's like that first slice is awesome, you know, and maybe even through slice 8. But at the end of it, no matter how awesome that cake is, you are definitely the fat kid who ate an entire cake by yourself.
I could watch 12 episodes of All in the Family in a row. Some men just can't reach.
I would probably get so sick of it. I wouldn't want to watch it for a while. It's weird because I do want to be one of those people that watches an episode in a time. Say like it's Glee. I don't want to be behind because I don't want to be behind the conversation or the discussion that people have about that episode. But I'm also I'm less likely to watch that episode as time goes on if I miss it.
I'm glad you brought up Glee, Roger. Why has Glee become such a point of contention for our country? Why is it tearing our country apart? I mean, there's the folks who love Glee are starting to get defensive, and they're getting aggressive, and the folks who hate Glee are getting more and more angry and saying, "Oh, Glee, that I can't believe you, like, you're one of those people." It's like sides are being drawn up, and I think it's just going to lead to trouble.
Well, it's interesting because Patrick Norton, our mutual friend and former current coworker for me. So he used to make, you know, he's like, Serafina and I would always talk about Glee, and you know, when Eileen was there, we would talk about Glee, and Patrick was always like, but now he's hooked. He's watched like the first like five episodes, and he can't stop watching, which is really bizarre because he was very dead set against that entire show, the philosophy, the singing, the Glee nature,
the Glee-ness of it. I'll tell you, I was really, really a big fan of Glee through the first half of the first season. I thought it was exceptionally well written. I thought the comedy was you know, very, very snappy and funny and mean, which is something that I didn't expect to see in a bunch of kids singing the television show, is to have like really biting, you know, almost black humor at times. But then it kind of got away from that. I don't know. Like I stopped, you know, I watched up to the Christmas episode this season, and I mean, it's collecting on my DVR, but I'm just kind of meh on it. I don't know. I haven't felt the Christmas episode, if it were.
It's kind of pandering. Actually, this last episode is kind of pandering too, but I still liked it. I don't know why. It's just something about it. Maybe it's the singing. Maybe it's about the dancing. Maybe it's the the complex, nuanced relationships that all the kids and the teachers have with each other. Or maybe it's because it's fun. I don't know.
I just don't understand why it's tearing this country apart.
I don't know. How is it tearing this country apart?
We have gleeks and non-gleeks, and they just don't seem to want to get along.
Maybe not. You know? Maybe this country should just separate. The Glee watchers and the non-Glee watchers.
The United States of Gleeks versus...
Why not?
Yeah.
Everyone else.
No, it's funny. What put me starting to think about this, I actually don't watch Glee very often. I every once in a while I'll sit down with Eileen, I watch it, I find it amusing, I never want to watch it again. And that doesn't mean... I don't mean that to sound like, and I never want to watch it again. I mean, like, I never feel like, ooh, I've got to watch the next episode. I just have – it has never caught my fancy, but it's never bugged me either. So I'm one of those few people who's sort of ambivalent about it, and yet everyone else I know is like, oh, you're a Glee person, or you're not a Glee person. And I actually – I bought – because I just thought the irony of it was so hilarious. I bought the cover they did of Kesha, whatever that song is, Brush My Teeth with a Bottle of Jack – I thought that was freaking hilarious that they had the Glee cast doing that. And I love that character who plays Brittany. I think they write some hilarious stuff for her.
She's a home run hitter.
Yeah, 49 cents. I download the song. I get no one has made a comment on that stupid social network ping on iTunes to me for months until I buy that song, right? And then suddenly the whole world is watching. And I've got, really, Tom? You bought that? You know, and like these scathing comments coming at me on Ping. And I'm like, wow, really? I mean, I don't care. I'm not going to try to defend
it. Knives come out.
Yeah.
It's amazing how polarized people get about somewhat innocuous stuff. You know, stuff that, I mean, in the grander scheme of things doesn't really matter. But I'm wondering if it's because the conversation for more important things is already so polarized that people want to move off to something that, you know, maybe because it's less serious, that it's okay to be a lot more aggro one way or another about it. Like, yeah, you know, whether or not you like one beverage over another, you know, I can't put my finger on it, but it seems that way. Like, you know, people will have a very diametrically opposed views on, you know, really stupid things. And it's not like, oh, yeah, you know, I'd like it sometimes. Like, no, I'll never drink it. And other people, that's the only thing I'll drink. And, you know, you can do that with, you know, you can do that with music artists. You can do that with TV shows, movies, you know, what kind of car you drive. Like, oh, I'll never own anything except an Audi. And so it's like, yeah, you know, I'm fine with a Beamer or Lexus or Infiniti.
No, Audi rules. No. Audi for life.
Totally. And I don't know what it is. It's just like, you know, people need something to attach to that they can get, you know, incredibly nutsoid over, you know, and just spit in your face as they tell you, you know, virtue after virtue after virtue of a product or a band or something. And then they go on and ridicule whatever you like. It's kind of like that Venn diagram that Ron Richards used to have. It had one circle that said music I like. The other circle said music you like, and where the music they intersect is that music I used to like. I think that says it all.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think that there's just a bandwidth, you know, issue. You know, is it like with the internet and Twitter and Facebook, there's so many ways, and blog comments, there's so many ways for us to get our opinion out there that, like, it's not that necessarily that we're turning away from anything else. We're just indulging in exactly what we want always. You know, and like I write a magic news industry blog, itricks.com, and it's like sometimes there'll be some commenters on there that are just like, they're so insanely more passionate about Criss Angel than I could ever imagine assigning any priority in my life. You know, it is a daily job for them to talk about Criss Angel and how much they hate Criss Angel every single day, right?
So But anti-fanboy against Criss Angel.
Oh my God. In the purest possible sense. I think that there's a lot of people like that for a lot of things. I mean, it's certainly, I know that, you know, just you could do an entire, I mean, like, you know, just look at Apple as a company and the for and against there. You know, I think that there's just as passionate the anti-fanboys for that company as there are fanboys of that company, you know? And it's interesting just to kind of look at, like, sometimes I'll be like, wow, I can't believe you're spending so much time talking about this.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, I'm the one running the magic blog. Like, I'm the one catering to that person. Like, I write about Criss Angel 7 times a week. So it's like, what else do I expect? I mean, these are the people that want to read about this stuff every single day. So should I be shocked when they want to talk about it and they want to express their opinion as loud as possible?
Well, it's interesting you bring up the Apple thing because, you know, back in the old days of home computing when you still had, you know, Commodore and Atari, you had the Atari ST, Amigas, C64, Apple II, GS, and all that. There was this huge, and, you know, it's very appropriate to call it a religious war. I mean, you had different camps, and they each staked out their claim, their territory, and their dogma, and, you know, woe be the person who had any contrary opinion because they would be attacked en masse on a message board or something because, you know, they used a TR-80 or Trash 80 or this person used a C64 or this person used a PC or this person used Amiga or an Atari. I don't know. It just seems that mentality has – maybe it's because of the internet. People have easier access to, you know, a way to voice their opinion and they do it, you know, instead of just kind of holding it in and – you know, during a polite discussion, you know, it's like, oh, well, I'll let everyone know on the internet and they'll type up some, you know, some rant or some angry post about, you know, what someone or someone did with their particular computer that they can't do on theirs or whatever.
It's tribalism, isn't it? It's basically saying this is how I define myself. And if you're on the other side, then I cast you out of my tribe. And I'm going to rally together with my Apple brothers or my Criss Angel hating brothers or my Glee brothers. Yeah. And we're going to stop you. And what I find just unsettling about that is this sort of like one issue litmus test that people have. It's like, oh, so you like that. Well then, I don't care anything about you in any other way. You're now on the other side.
Well, people do that with politics all the time. It's like, oh, what did you vote for, or what do you believe in, or which politician are you for? It's like, you know, when people say that, I automatically just don't say anything because I know, you know, depending on what I say, I'll either set them off or you know, I'll make friends with someone I'm not sure I want to be friends with because they value someone so much based on one small facet of who they are. And it's just, I don't know, it's kind of creepy. It's like Planet of the Apes, sort of.
Yeah,
you know,
no,
when the gorillas
is,
and the orangutans and the chimpanzees and stuff kind of went at it.
and you know, it was the orangutans who really liked Ping, you know, but the other ones, they were not for it and they thought it was a useless add-on. And
And that's why Apple fanboys often are depicted as orangutans in I Ken Has Cheeseburger pictures.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm glad that we could crack this code here live on East Meets West.
Wow. Web 9942 in the chat room says next topic, as if we had one.
I was a tensor guy in the chat room says like a tribe. I don't belong to any tribe, and then gives the diamond glove symbol for SMW. So, you know, yeah, and absolutely. I think like I don't think there's necessarily anything to, you know, there's anything inherently wrong with identifying with people of similar tastes or finding value in that. It's the problem is when it comes at the exclusion of everyone else on the planet.
Have you ever been in a situation where you come across someone and you have you know, your tastes and a variety of things are so close? It's like, oh, we're going to be best of friends or whatever. And you start talking to them, and you know the first few weeks it's great because you're, you know, train stories and you know shooting the shit. I said shit.
Oh no!
Oh, I said it twice.
Oh, my bad. But in any case, after a while, you realize you actually don't have as much in common with that person as you thought.
Yeah.
Or the opposite is you do something like stupid like I did, which is like, oh, 50 cents is nothing. I'm going to buy that stupid song on a whim, and I probably never listen to it again. And then all of a sudden, everyone identifies you as like, oh, you're a fan of – oh, I like that too. Oh, you know, let's – and it's like, no, I actually really don't like it. I'm not that into it. It was just sort of a, you know, thing. You know, it's similar to that effect where like somebody says, hey, do you like frogs? You're like, yeah, I kind of like frogs. And then from then on, all you get for birthdays and Christmases are gifts with frogs on them. And you're like, how did this happen?
Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you what, it's so funny to see, like, I'm a big fan of the Pittsburgh Steelers football team. So I have a few friends that'll go out like every Sunday assuming football ever comes back, I'll eventually do it again. You know, I'll go and watch games, but like, that is the only language that I can communicate with my friends who I watch the games with is just football. If it's not football, then it's nothing. It's like it falls off a cliff, everything else. Like I can't talk to them about podcasts or blogs or Twitter, you know, anything that ventures into what I do 80% of the day, you know, needs this 30-minute, you know, description of, well, you see, the internet is a, you know, and it's so weird because it's not like I don't enjoy my time. It's just that, you know, there is one language for which I can communicate, and that's it.
Yeah, and it happens in sports too, where like and I used to be guilty of it on the other end, right? When I'm a big baseball fan, and for a few years there, I was like following every move and every step. It was a little much. I had to back off a little bit. And so people would say like, I'm from Chicago. And I'm like, oh, Cubs or White Sox? Oh, White Sox. Oh, really? Oh, so you're a White Sox fan? And then I start talking about all the things that are happening on their team. And like, can you believe that Podsednik is, you know, might be coming over? And they'd be like,
yeah,
I have no idea what you're talking about. You're speaking another language. I mean, yeah, I like the White Sox.
You're halfway into going into their AAA farm, you know, rotation, and you're like, well, you know, I really think that they got a lot of depth in, right. You know.
Can you believe they've been able to keep Burley, you know, with the young stars rise? They're like, I don't even know who Burley is. What are you talking about? I've gone to like three games in my life.
Exactly. Yeah. My dad took me to games when I was a kid, and I own a hat.
Right. Exactly. And you're like, some kind of fan you are.
Or no,
it's
the
like
best,
I never
best.
Said to be a fan. maybe people are, there's so many people alive today, and we're in such, historically, we're just so put together with so many other people that have, you know, varying different, you know, different tastes, different, you know, viewpoints and things that we automatically latch onto someone we think has, you know, one bit of commonality with us, something they can bond over, and they just kind of like a lamprey or a leech, you know, not let go.
Are you a fan of leeches?
Only for certain ailments. Although if you do have leeches around, it's always good to have a cigarette or something to burn them off with. Mm. You don't want to pull them off because they don't let go. You got to burn, and then the jaws retract.
Hence the phrase, feel the burn.
Yes. Absolutely. That's also where that comes from.
Yep.
I prefer leech treatments to be applied by a doctor under the age of 15. I don't like to go any older than that.
Really, the best leechings come from the young.
Yes, exactly. Oh, you know, they got those nimble fingers, and you know, they can just get those leeches exactly.
Yeah, well, the leeches won't get stuck to their fingers because they're so small.
They're so tiny, even for the leech mouths.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we've solved most of the world's problems for this week. Justin Robert Young, thank you so much for joining us on East Meets West. It was great to have you along. Let folks know the other stuff you're doing and where they can find it.
Well, I'll tell you what, of course, NSFW 10 o'clock on Tuesday. This week we'll be joined by your friend and mine, Scott Effendog Johnson,
who is going to be
hanging out with us this Tuesday. And then also the Weird Things podcast, find it on iTunes. Or more specifically, folks, there's a very exciting project that I'm working on with Andrew Main from the Weird Things podcast and an awesome coder friend of ours by the name of Dan Dirks, and that's called Podcaster without an e.com. It's a new web-based podcast player that we now have. We have a player for Weird Things, so if you want to check it out, podcaster.com/weirdthings, and we're going to be rolling it out to a couple other ones.
I've been meaning to get back to you about that because I want to be a test subject.
Oh, absolutely! No, we would love to put any and all podcasts, and we're talking to a bunch of people to roll that out. But basically, the cool thing about it is that with iOS and any kind of desktop browser, it remembers using HTML5 standards. It remembers the last everything that you've done with that particular page or whatever. So it'll show you what you've listened to, what you're halfway through listening to. And here's the super cool thing, kids: it wirelessly syncs with any other iOS device. It just generates a unique URL for you. So you can go from your phone to your desktop, open up the page, and you can pick up exactly where you left off without syncing at all. So check it out, podcasterwithoutane.com.
All right, that's it for this edition of East Meets West. Roger, anything to add before we check out of here?
One last thing. Someone mentioned, actually a few people mentioned, that Haribo, the gummy candy, is actually German, not Austrian. But, who can tell? They both speak German.
Okay, good. I'm glad we got that cleared up. I would hate to have that go on the record mistaken. Thanks, everybody, for watching. Thanks to Jammer B for producing back at the Twit Cottage. And thanks for Leo letting us stream the recording of the show live on Twit every Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. And thank you for watching. We'll see you next time. Don't forget to comment, subreddit.com/EMW. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Is part of the Frog Pants Studios network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.